What tips or advice do you have for them? You sort of touched on a couple things, but what tips or advice do you have for someone trying to grow a company?
Sure. Probably my biggest advice to anybody trying to do that is know your why.
Yeah.
So do you want to get to 20 trucks just because it's cool or because your friend has it or this or whatever? For us, it's all about impact and influence on people. And so really from day one, it's about how can we create this environment where people can thrive? How can we give them a home? How can we be a little bit different in the trucking industry? I hope that our people never feel like they're a number. And yes. So if you want to grow, it's and I would say this from small to getting into that medium size or whatever you want to call it. Some of the things that we now have to deal with, e-logs, obviously they're here for a long time, but emissions, there are things that we just kind of have to embrace and move forward. They're going to be here. Yeah, we can all have our conversations about that, but embrace the new technology, know your why, and then also know your cost.
Hey everyone, and welcome to the podcast, Caution Wide Right, brought to you by Compliance Navigation Specialist. I'm Luke, your host, and today we're going to be chatting with one of the best dry bulk commodity transporters here in the U.S. that is also one of the safest on the roads, and they got the awards to prove it. GFI Transport is a family-owned trucking company and a leader for over 30 years in hauling dry bulk commodities such as grain, feed ingredients, ag products, mulch, sand, and more. Primarily serving areas east of the Mississippi, but they go much beyond at times as well. GFI Transport started with one driver in 1990 and quickly grew to eight company drivers and eight owner-operators by 1995, which is when they started Garber Brokerage. GFI primarily focuses on dump trailers and hopper bottoms until like the mid-90s. Walk-in floor trailers came along with bigger volumes and hoppers were built in the back of them. And today they do dump, walking floors, pneumatics, and a few vans for specialized services. Ryan is here with me. He's president and CEO of GFI Transport. Ryan, welcome to the podcast.
Yeah, thanks for having me on, Luke. It's great to be here.
Definitely. So just to get things started, I'm just curious, can you tell me a little bit about your journey in the transportation industry, watching the company grow, and then you eventually taking it over?
Yeah, absolutely. So my father and I are still, you mentioned him, but we're still partners in the company, but it's been kind of a neat transition or journey over the years, and even back to when I graduated high school, of course went west on wheat harvest, and that was a lot of fun, but came home and bought a truck. And so bought a truck, ran as an owner-operator for a couple years before it opened up in the office. And it was interesting when you go back and you think through different things. My wife and I we're married 20 years now, but she would have never married a truck driver or a farmer. And when we got married back then, I was actively both. So it was interesting. But
were you hauling for your dad?
I was. Okay. Yep, owner-operator for GFI Transport or Garber Brokerage at the time. But the reason that the story is kind of cool, a position opened up in the office a little bit after we got married, and always thought maybe I'd be a trucker or a farmer, and never really saw myself sitting in an office or doing that. And when we started thinking about raising a family, it was like, well, probably don't want to do that on the road. And while people do it and do a great job of it, that wasn't part of our story. And so when the position opened up in dispatch, it was something that we applied for, or I applied for and was able to get it. And so throughout the years, seen a lot of growth, and we've had a lot of growth and opportunities. It's been a lot of fun. Worked with my father and uncle for a number of years. And then my uncle chose to do something else, and he's doing a great job. But so it's my father and I. And we've grown to about 80 trucks today, two locations, half those trucks that we own, and then half owner operators,
awesome.
Some leased on carriers as well. So, yeah, it's been a lot of fun.
And I'm curious, you know, you're driving, you got your Class A CDL. Yeah. Did you have a CB handle?
I did. It was Haas.
Haas, yep. There you go. Love it.
Some people still call me that today. So.
Oh, awesome. Anyway. All right, so, you know, GFI has been a family-owned business for over 30 years. How do those deep roots and values shape what GFI is today?
Yeah, well, I think it all goes back to relationships. But even early on, the trucking company was started in 1990, as you had mentioned. And one of the things was they bought their first truck, and for the farming operation is really where it was. The transmission goes out. How are we going to pay for that? And so they start hauling for a local company, Cargill. It was in Marietta. But just from the rail to the bins, just a half a mile. And through more relationships, they had the opportunity to buy a trailer, which at that time came with PUC rights. And before deregulation, some of you might remember that, but PUC rights meant something. And so when you had those rights, you could charge a lot more. And I guess, you could charge more for what you were doing. And some people took advantage of that. Well, when they got into that, through relationships, bought that first trailer, it came with the rights. And they gave it to Lancaster County. We're going to do what we say we're going to do, and we're going to charge a fair price to do it. And so quickly, early on, the company grew. And so to bring us to where we are today, those foundations are still in place. We want to treat people fairly, really create an environment where people can thrive. And that's what we're all about today. But that started back in day one with treating people fair and doing what we say we're going to do.
So. Well, and it's evident that people definitely enjoy it there, because a few years ago, I saw a post where I believe they were celebrating your birthday, and it was a giant WD-40 can that said RG-40. Yeah. I'm curious, how did, you know, honk for Ryan's birthday? It's hilarious. Did you ever find out who was behind that?
I did, and actually it was nobody connected with the company.
Oh,
it was
really?
A good friend of mine. It took me a while, but I was able to find out.
Oh, that's awesome.
Who did it, and it was a lot of fun. But yeah, people got a lot of mileage out of that.
A lot of honking out that day.
Yeah.
So let's talk about the growth and success of GFI. You know, it's grown significantly. You know, we talked about how, the different types of trailers, you even got vans now for some things. What's driven this evolution, and what key moments define that growth?
Yeah, so it's really about relationships. Relationships and people, whether it's with your customers or with your employees. I mean, the people we have in our office staff, and from our office staff to our shop, billing, even out to the drivers and everybody that calls GFI home, and our brokerage department as well.
Yep.
It's really a fun team. And so defining moments, I would say 5 or 6 years ago, we really put some structure around our growth. We've grown kind of organically throughout the years. It's not our desire to be the big box carriers. While there's a place for that, that's not really our heart. We want to know our drivers, know our people, know their families, and still have that small business atmosphere and even the family atmosphere. But defining moments throughout, we put some strategic plans around how we're going to grow. Little did we know, and I think that the good Lord has things intertwined in our whole story. I know he does. But little did we know, back when we started saying, let's get strategic about our growth, really defining some of our positions, who does what, and things like that. We knew short years later, we'd have the opportunity to purchase a company in Bellefonte, where one owner was talking about retiring, and so allowed us to expand into that area with our second location. But I think when we put some strategic plans together to grow is when things really started to take off. But it's just, if you think back through our story, there's been kind of things happen by what I'll say accident. It wasn't really accident, but things just kind of happened. Opportunities presented themselves, and we took those opportunities. We're now more on the track to say, okay, we're a growing company. We have this growth mindset. Matter of fact, when this comes out, we're actually hiring a vice president for the company as well. Just, again, part of a strategic plan on how we're going to put some teeth in growing, as well as serve our current clients and our employees very well.
And and it's a lot, like here at CNS, a lot of those opportunities come when the clients and the customers are like, hey, can you do this?
Yeah.
And it's like, we'll look into it, and we'll grow with you.
Right, and we're in the middle of that right now with a customer that's completely different than what we do on a daily basis, saying, you guys have interest in looking at this. And so, it's just interesting how it kind of snowballed.
Well, then 2016, you guys went from your sort of trailer offices to a whole new facility. I'm just curious, what was that transition like, seeing that building go up?
Yeah, the cool part was, we were so excited at that time, and we still are, but we were so excited to move out of, we were operating out of office trailers, and while it worked well, I mean, it was really cool. You had a waterfall feature when it rained because it was coming through the ceiling between the two office trailers. But there was something fun about the camaraderie, working close, everybody knew everybody, that kind of stuff. And we still have that, but when you built the office, it did change. But in 16, when we built this, I said, we're going to have plenty of room for growth. And so we added some extra space, and we're never going to outgrow this, and da 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 da. It's going to be a while. Well, now we're at the 8-year mark from that 2024, and we're out of room. And so that's one of the things we're navigating through now. Where do we even put our new hires? And where do we go from here? And so, again, part of why we want to be strategic about our growth. And
yeah,
but yeah, that was really, it was cool. Our shop manager, Jeff, has been with us since 1991. And so he worked out of our old shop. You couldn't even fit hardly a truck and trailer in at the same time. They had to unhook him, and he did a lot of work outside. And so when we could get to 2016 and have the new facility, it was really nice. Hey, we can finally pull a truck and trailer in and do some work
on it. And then drive it straight out.
Yeah, and then leave out the other side. Yep. Exactly. So it was really cool. But that was definitely an exciting time. And now we're to the point where kind of what's next? And yeah, how do you maximize what you have?
Sort of like, you know, we built this building relatively new as well. And the original plans was upstairs was going to be other companies. Okay. And then no. And then now we're growing way too fast. Same thing. Now, I'm curious, on the flip side, there's always major challenges that greatly test the company and their values. How did GFI handle like the freight recession in 2008 and '09? I know 2015 and 2016 dry bulk had a hard time.
Yeah.
COVID, the recent freight recession in 22, 23.
Yeah, so even going back, what I would say from early on is we tried to be really stick with our customers and be loyal to them through the good and the bad. And so that meant even back to early on, we bought that trailer, or I say we loosely, I was young at that point. but when they bought the trailer, is treating them fair. And so through some of the good times, you still have to have rate increases, things like that. You try not to gouge them. You try to understand what their needs are. And then what we found even through all the times that you mentioned was they're also loyal back to you. Yep. So some of our larger customers, you treat fair on the good times, they treat you fair on the down times, and it all evens out. We kind of, I don't remember what year it was, but we made the decision back then that, you know, we're going to try and build our core customers around things that are year-round.
Yes.
And a lot of what we do is around the food and feed industry. So animals always have to eat, and people always have to eat as well. And so even back a number of years ago, we looked at our strategic kind of direction, went, whoa, this one customer is, you know, 40%, 50% of what we do. How do we diversify? And so that really helped us through some of the downtimes as well. But again, business goes back to relationships, and so that's what helped. But yeah, there were some hard times, sleepless nights through that. And even, you know, walking through COVID, it was, yeah, I hate to bring it up, but it was really a time where it was interesting to see people come together after that.
Oh, yeah.
And I think that they really did, and our team really did. But boy, it was hard to navigate through some of that, you know. But really, as a transportation company, the negative effects on that quick were very short. So, you know, there might have been a month or something where all the trucking slowed down, but it came back pretty quick. And then obviously it was strong for a while after that.
Yeah. I mean, in fact, it was so strong, like huge peak, that maybe eventually to get back to norms, we still might have some owner operators potentially going to be going out of business, revocation, but you know, we'll see what that looks like in the coming years. But I'm curious, a lot of my audience might have a few trucks, maybe want to grow to that 10, 20 fleet. What tips or advice do you have for them? You sort of touched on a couple of things, but what tips or advice do you have for someone trying to grow a company?
Sure. Probably my biggest advice to anybody trying to do that is know your why.
Yeah.
So do you want to get to 20 trucks just because it's cool or because your friend has it or this or whatever? For us, it's all about impact and influence and people. And so really from day one, it's about how can we create this environment where people can thrive? How can we give them a home? How can we be a little bit different in the trucking industry? I hope that our people never feel like they're a number. And so if you want to grow, it's and I would say this from small to getting into that medium size or whatever you want to call it. Some of the things that we now have to deal with, e-logs, obviously they're here for a long time, but emissions, there are things that we just kind of have to embrace and move forward. They're going to be here. We can all have our conversations about that, but embrace the new technology, know your why, and then also know your cost. I mean, I think that's many people get into it. You start to grow a little bit, and you know, we have to manage it today. We're in a growth mindset, and we're still thinking about, okay, what can we don't want to grow faster than we can afford, if you will. And so, but when you know your why and you really live that out in growing your business, that would be my recommendation. Know why you want to get to 10 or 20. And doesn't mean my why has to be yours. It can be a profit thing. It can be, you know, whatever the case may be, but know your why, and that'll drive you. And I think that applies really to anything in life.
Oh, totally. And, you know, so we're going to transition to sort of why should a driver or owner-operator drive for GFI? Why is it a great place to drive for? And I know some of your core values are integrity, customer service, and diligence. Yeah. I'm just curious, with that in mind, why should a driver look to, hey, work for GFI?
Yeah, I'm just in the middle of putting out a little email to our team, matter of fact, this morning. But the reason I mentioned that is why I come work for us. What makes us different, and I just told him when this email goes out, but one of our, I would say, industry advantages or market advantages is our team. It's the people that we get to deal with. It's the just who I mentioned before. It's everybody that would call GFI home in some capacity. Yeah. So you're going to get a different experience with us. You're not going to be a number. You have somebody you can call. It was weird as we kind of grew. You know, there was back in the day, I knew everything. Okay, take that for what it is. But knew every load that we hauled, knew every customer. Right. And on a day, I knew what truck was doing what. And, of course, as we grew, I'm not smart enough to know all that. And so, again, back to a few years ago, a defining moment when we put some really structure around who does what. Now you have that person you can call, and they are in the loop, and they do know what's going on. But, yeah, we're going to treat you fair. You're going to be paid on time. And hopefully you'll be a part of a family atmosphere. I mean, I would say that's one of our biggest market advantages. You're part of a family atmosphere. We still do a summer picnic. We still do a Christmas party. Get people together. Yes, it's harder when you grow. Last year, so we expanded to that, to Bellefonte. We were all excited. We did that in October. January, I think it was 7th. We were super pumped. We're going to have everybody together. And on the day of our Christmas party, it snows and half the new, I think it was more than that, most of the people couldn't drive down from State College. So that was kind of bum. But, yeah, and I think another thing is just communication. You're going to be treated like a person and be communicated with. And we're not perfect. Like, we're trying to get better each and every day, and there's days that we fail. It's going to happen, but it's how you handle some of that stuff moving forward.
Completely agree. Yeah. Now, while you mentioned that, I do want to transition to safety. And honestly, congratulations to back-to-back Great West Safety Award winners with the PMTA. Here's to a three-peat. I'm just curious, what practices and policies, what does it take to build, you know, award-winning safety team?
Yeah, I think it is building a team. We solidified that. I think as you grow again, there can be not gray areas, but areas you don't put as much focus on as you should. And again, a few years ago, we put something in place. I'll tell you, it really went back to one of the things that's helping us, and I know you guys do insurance, but we looked at being in a captive insurance about, I would say, 10 years ago, and we weren't good enough. And that bothered me
that
a little
bit.
That light
bulb,
kind of bothered me. And that was through, part of ELDs, the whole nine yards was coming up, and I'm going, wait a minute, if we're putting these trucks on the road, we need to get better. And so we wanted to get to the point where sometime, for really financial sense as well, and for safety, we wanted to get to the point where a captive would make sense. And so we did that in 2019. One of the cool parts about the captive is your peers are now looking at you going, what are you doing?
Yep.
You're answering to your team, but you're also answering to a whole nother group of people. And so we have a safety director, and I would say we embrace some of the things that we didn't really care for. Like, we embraced outward facing cameras, which actually they've been a great thing. We've embraced, okay, we're going to go to ELDs. We're going to go ahead of time. And again, that kind of stuff was kind of a pain. On the same aspect, let's put a positive spin on it. Here's why it's important. Here's why we're going to do it. And then we have safety bonuses. We, through our Samsara, which is who we use for ELDs, but they also give out a reporting, and the drivers have slowed down. Yeah, the scorecard. Yep. And now we have people competing. I mean, there's guys in the 99 and 100%, and it, like, so you get some traction around that.
Any way you can get gamification involved, for sure, that helps.
And people are, and they'll have, my score's at a 97 today. Where'd I miss? They're calling in and that kind of stuff. So, yeah, it's really cool and kind of creates a fun environment around it, but you have to embrace it. And
correct.
Quite frankly, when the speed limit's 65 and you used to drive 75, we had to change that, and now you're driving 65 to get the good scores, but it has helped for sure.
Makes sense. Now, of course, you know, you mentioned your safety director, Barb Robertson, is a huge key to the success. Yeah. How important was her role in this, and what was sort of the hardest thing for her to build that success?
Yeah, I would say getting people on board.
Yeah.
You know, it's hard because she can always be the bad guy.
You're right.
And when she has to call you, her personality and the way she's handled things is she'll often put that positive spin on it. And I said this before, but we continue to tell the why. Why is this important? Well, and through all that, I'll be honest, one of our customers, we became their number one carrier because they had to fire their number one carrier because of their yeah. safety rating. And so that was kind of a defining moment where we said, we're never going to get to that point.
Yep.
And accidents do happen. It's what you do with them afterwards.
But oh, completely.
Barb has played a huge role. And I think she just continues to put the positive spin on telling her why through that. Because there are some situations she has to handle that are not fun.
Oh, yeah. For sure. And it's a great point. You touched on, you know, lowering that insurance risk, you know, and trying to look healthy for, you know, other customers looking at you, embracing the technology. I'm just curious, like sometimes it can be a lot of data coming in, yeah. video, telematics. How's that data management process yeah. work for your GFI?
So you kind of got to choose what you're going to do with it,
yeah.
right? And choose what things you're going to pay attention to. You have to pay attention to it all, but there you have to set some structure around it. And she's done a really good job of doing that. Yeah. But, you know, every day we're looking at crucial event videos and coaching and,
very cool.
you know, you have to do that. And so you just a little bit of trying to be ahead of it. We used to learn as we go. Now we try and be ahead of it a little bit. And she's doing a great job with that as well.
Well, I know litigation is always the huge part of it, yeah. too. And, you know, a lot of them will just point to, like, well, why didn't you do this? Or why didn't you know about something? Have you ever had to deal with a litigation issue like that and then just sort of flip it around being like, ah, actually, we had our ducks in a row?
Yeah, not I can thankfully say we That's haven't
awesome.
Really had to.
Yeah.
What I will say is we probably haven't had to because with our insurance company and with the processes that we have in place now,
yeah.
it's really easy to get the accurate information to somebody.
Correct.
And there are some instances where it falls in, right? I mean, yeah. it happens. We're in transportation. But when you can provide your best practices and information really quickly,
yeah.
it's
documented. Look, yep. it's right there.
Yeah. Are you ready? CNS Learning Hub has made it their business to ensure you can confidently answer yes at any stage of the game for all of your professional development and confidence needs in the transportation, construction, manufacturing, medical, and educational industries. For learning to change employee behavior needs to be clear, engaging, and easy to access. Much of the training available in the marketplace is bland and cumbersome. The CNS Training Development Team sets a far higher standard, the one that we believe you deserve. Your needs are unique and you shouldn't have to compromise on services meant to keep your business at its growing edge. For that reason, we offer numerous formats and features to take all the friction out of ongoing professional learning. On-demand e-learning offers the ability for your employees to take courses at a time and location convenient for them. This can be done in one sitting or broken up over multiple sessions. Our services are wanted far and wide, and travel isn't in the cards for all of our clients. Our dedicated media team brings next-level talent to our live streaming services to help our clients join live events, mixed with back-channeling, question and answer, and the feeling that they're right there with us. For a more traditional feel, join us for face-to-face live events in our spacious CNS headquarters classroom. Our instructors carefully consider the delivery format and room setup to maximize every minute of your team's time. Looking for a more customized option, either for a highly specified topic or our experts coming on site to you? Our team of educational professionals will customize a program or course specifically for your company's needs or content and or location. So, are you ready? With CNS, the answer is yes. The focus is your company's performance and the outcome is excellence. Learn more at cnslearninghub.com.
Awesome. So I want to transition to, you know, the opportunities in transportation yeah. In the trucking industry. There's so many types of role, even just at GFI. You know, you got brokerage, you got your management, you can be a driver, an owner operator, a diesel mechanic, and so much more. I'm just curious, what advice can you give someone considering a career in transportation? And that could yeah. be any age, from high school,
right.
you know,
yeah.
transitioning from another career.
Yeah. I would think, there and we've talked about this a little bit before, but there's so many opportunities in
yeah.
trucking. And so one of the things that I try to do is put the positive spin on transportation. We all know that there's a truck that cut us off one time or another for whatever reason. And that's our view of trucking. Like, and that's right. why it's so important to be safe and be respectful. But you didn't remember that the thousand other trucks that you passed on that trip were doing a very good job being safe, driving the speed limit like professional truck drivers. When it comes to trucking, it is a professional job that you're doing out there. And while it can get a bad rap, there's so many opportunities. Just what you said, whether it's in the shop, in the office, even out in sales, being on the road, different things like that. And I think sometimes we tie it to, well, I'm just an X. Well, I don't care if you're just a janitor. You're not just in anything.
No, you're part of
it. You're part of, exactly, you're part of building something. Nobody wants to walk into a restroom that's not clean, right?
Right.
And so we all have a job and it all ties together. The cool part about trucking, too, is you can start in the shop. I mean, even I was farming at 6 years old, when I say farming loosely, but on the payroll for, I think it was $1 an hour.
That's awesome.
I'm not sure if that's legal now, but I think it was back then. But anyway, you kind of work your way up and you work your way through things. But there's just so much opportunity even to work your way up within. And like I mentioned earlier, I never thought I'd be working in an office environment for so many years. And sure enough, here we are today. So.
Yep. And then, I mean, the idea, PMTA is working on educating young people in careers in trucking. Yeah. You know, a lot of that is this idea that you don't really have to go into debt with a 4-year college. There's opportunities elsewhere. I know one of their research is they found that, you know, talking with members of PMTA and CDL schools like with us, a lot of the students are potentially looking at other trades first because yeah. there's easier transition maybe. I'm just curious, how can we better communicate that opportunity in transportation?
Well, I think I'll speak on that just for a second. When it comes to when these kids get out of school, high school specifically, it's really hard to go into a trucking career, specifically driving truck, because Correct. Of some of the legislation. In Pennsylvania and every state, until you're 21, you can't go outside of state lines. While that could seem okay in some scenarios, you can't live in York. Work out of York, you can't drive to Baltimore,
yep.
but you can drive to Erie, you can drive to Pittsburgh, you can drive to Northeastern PA.
Philly to New York or yeah. New Jersey, same thing.
You can live in Philly, you can't drive to Camden, but right. you can drive to Erie. Like, mm-hmm. tell me how that makes sense. Now, that's a federal thing, so I really think that we got to educate people on that because yeah. there's not every 16-year-old in Pennsylvania that should be driving a car. There's not every 18-year-old that should be driving a truck, but the ones that should, let's capitalize on them. Let's give them extensive training programs. I know about your school. Yep. You guys do a phenomenal job. You have one-on-one training. Now I'm giving you a plug, but no, it's great. You have one-on-one training, and you really produce quality truck drivers on the end. Then it's our job as companies to give them that opportunity, train them one-on-one after that fact, and that's what we do.
Yeah.
So once a driver has been trained for maybe it's months, you know, it's obviously – weeks here or a month. I don't know how long the program is, but then they come into ours and then we're signing off. Yes, this person is safe based on this criteria.
Right.
And so we got to figure out a way to get them and keep them interested before they're going out to these other trades because
totally.
Of the opportunity and the pay. Your drivers today are making great money. And there's opportunity to make great money.
Yeah, I mean, to start out in a trucking career, driving truck, you know, even if they, you know, they get their Class A CDL, maybe they, you know, if the state can't allow it yet, I know Pennsylvania Senate is finally looking at that under 21 interstate driving,
yeah.
And other states are trying to do that too, but they can get a career for, you know, 40, 50 grand right out of high school potentially, and then opportunities to double that in just a few years. Now, part of that few year transition is hitting that 21 year age. And why that's so important is insurance and risk. Hey, I'm not going to let you, your insurance is going to be bumped way high if you're going to let this kid drive interstate. Eventually, that's what's got to change is we have to show and prove. And there's so many rules for underage 21 to drive interstate and being approved to do so. Can we show those, measure those results and prove, yes, these guys can be safe and yeah. insurance shouldn't, you know, worry about it so much.
Right.
But, and well, then companies should be willing to hire those kids.
Sure. We would do it in a heartbeat with yeah. the right people. And for me, I think it would make a lot of sense. Let's put a mileage around it.
Right.
Because then it's pretty easy if you put a 300, I'm not formulating this, but if you put a 300 mile radius around it, you know your area, you know your yes. terrain, you know everything. And let's let them learn there for for even a couple years until they get some, but we got to give them an avenue to get into the industry. So that'd be my big promotion.
I love it. And the other piece, you know, a diesel mechanic, I know you guys, you know, hiring diesel mechanics, and I recently actually wrote an article on this, but I'm just curious, you know, when you look for a diesel mechanic, a lot of times you want them to have a Class A CDL. Mm-hmm. I'm curious why.
Primarily, it's good. We feel like, I believe that if you're going to inspect a CDL truck, you have to be able to road test it.
Yeah.
Or somebody does. Somewhere. And so it's very helpful. In our small business, it's helpful. We do have a few mechanics that don't, and it's no problem, but it's helpful if they can take a truck to somebody or bring a truck back from. It's not to get them necessarily into the truck on a daily basis. It's just have that opportunity, even take it to a shop. You know, they can't even take it to an outside shop for work. So, but you don't have to necessarily have a CDL to have a good career and be in a diesel tech either.
Well, and, you know, a lot of here at our school is, you know, there's a lot of hotshotters. They're just driving a Ford truck with a pulling trailer and commodities. But, you know, sometimes we just recommend, hey, get a Class A anyway. Because if you want that growth or eventually step into something, you've got that opportunity now. But in the end, let's talk about some advocacy. So PMTA does a lot on supporting the trucking industry, talking with state, Congress, and so much more. And I know your father's been a part of it, heavily involved with the PMTA. Why is it so important that to be involved with an organization like that?
Yeah, and I would say for PMTA, I'm involved in the local Lancaster chapter, and he's involved in the state. And I would say recently it's really become evident on what they're doing is, okay, yes, we can call them up and get information on, you know, as a member, you can get information on something safety sensitive, or they put on safety days, which are all beneficial.
Yeah.
But most recently, I really feel that the reason you should be a PMTA member, if I can put a plug in for them, is their advocacy. And right now, their near-term goals are trying to figure out this this lawsuit reform.
Yep.
Because basically, you know, you've heard it said, hit a truck, get a check. And that's horrible. They can, I won't go into all that, but we need to have some sort of lawsuit reform, and they're driving that. The other thing they're staying ahead of is the transportation budget looks like it might fall short again next year. From the state level,
right?
And where have they historically came back to is transportation. And I think we're the sixth most expensive state in the U.S. to operate a truck, and that's from registration, the whole nine yards. And I think it's been from fuel taxes to registrations to everything, they've been able to come after us somehow, and that needs to stop. So it's the advocacy. They're also, when you're in an accident, one of the things they're working on is if a seatbelt it's not admissible whether you had your seatbelt on or not. And so while it's a state law that you must have your seatbelt on, if you're in an accident and are severely injured and you would have had your seatbelt on, it doesn't matter, which is just a few of the things that they're doing. And so it's advocacy for trucking. Truck parking's another one that they're trying to get Pennsylvania to look at harder. And so they're really out there behind the scenes.
Exactly.
And you can check out their website too. I'm pretty sure there's a whole thing on it. But behind the scenes, they're working with our legislators to try and get some of these things passed and stay ahead of them.
Yeah, and I'm a huge advocate for this as well. I mean, I was over in Oregon, helped, you know, with OTA, and then here in Pennsylvania, and trucking advocacy. I mean, so PMTA.org, if you want to go check that out. But you know, what does that even mean? It's literally going to the state capitol and talking to legislators who are passing these rules and regulations and being an ear of like, hey, you should consider this because, hey, did you know this? Or, hey, get these legislators out to a company like ours to see what these trucks do. What kind of training are we actually doing? And getting even their mindset out of they're annoying on the road, right? But specifically with like fuel taxes and the cost, like, yeah, we understand, you know, we're transitioning from gas to other, you know, vehicles, and that's reducing the gas tax, basically less money for you know, the roads to be fixed.
Sure.
So how do you get more money for the roads to be fixed? Because there's less people filling up at the gas station. Well, it's easy to just go, well, let's raise fuel taxes on the truckers. And it's like, there's got to be other plans, and that's what they're doing. And I do want to stress one more thing is emissions. So federally, if you don't know, you know, like, so CARB and emissions, you know, we all want our trucks to be as efficient and healthy for the environment as possible. But there's two standards. There's the federal standard or the California CARB standard. And we follow in Pennsylvania under the California CARB standard. And so the rules they're making in California, we have to implement here. Yeah. And it is insane, some of those, you know, timelines and trends. And I know PMTA is specifically pushing hard on trying to rethink that and slow that down. Have you heard anything recent on some of those updates?
Yeah, so, and to your point, I might misspeak here a little bit, but I think it was 01 or 02, California was putting some emissions things on, and whoever's in Pennsylvania is going, yes, we should agree with that. And maybe at that time we should have.
Right.
What it did was, whatever was done locked us in forever to abide. So we can't even vote today for anybody in the state or whatever. We can't put the right people in place and then vote policy or whatever for any of this.
Yeah.
Whatever California does, it's here in Pennsylvania. We're one of four states, I think, that are tied to it. So we are trying to get removed from that because we ought to be able to make our own decisions here. And right now, I know that there was some back and forth on it. I think they're waiting on a ruling right now as we speak, but I know there's nothing final on it. But it is important that we would be released from that so we can make our own decisions with our own legislators based on that.
Yeah. And so PMTA networking with other companies and fleets, getting to know people like Ryan to help you grow your company to, again, that advocacy is so important. Now I want to transition back to GFI. You know, a lot of what we do here, we're talking about safety, talking about compliance and keeping companies safe. You guys have a great safety record. I want to talk about hiring and training and keeping driver retention.
Yeah.
What are some of those policies that you have in place when hiring a driver, and what does it look like, especially with a new driver, keeping them long term?
Yeah, so I think, again, back to the beginning, there was probably a period of time where, if you could fog the window, you were hired, and you did. Everybody that maybe was a truck driver back, I'm going to say in the day, had very similar upbringings to the transportation industry.
Right.
Well, that has changed a lot over the years. Yeah. And so one of the things we had to do is change our onboarding policy, change our training. And it is kind of hard when a guy might know the truck, know whatever, and then we have to put him with somebody for a couple of weeks. But training's important. They get to learn about us. They get to ask questions. And then also, who are the right trainers? Because that can change as well. And so we have a great training program when somebody comes, just the whole start to finish. And I will say when we first started talking about that or getting involved in our onboarding procedure, I'm like, why are we wasting our time? But they were right. I was wrong, because now with our safety record, it has helped. So, yeah, get them in. They can learn your culture. They need to learn your culture. Yeah. Learn who we're about. Put them with a trusted trainer that we respect, and then they both have to sign off, yes, I'm comfortable with the equipment, and the trainer has to say they're comfortable as well.
That's cool.
And so it's not just, okay, you're hired and put them out in the road. You can't do that anymore.
And you've got great drivers. I know we interviewed one of them at Truck Driver Appreciation Week. We did a video on that, and one of them was talking about, you know, he's driven for 35 years and loves working for your company. Yeah. So it's just fun to hear and see that. Do you believe, so, you know, with the driver retention piece, there's always a lot of turnover, especially with the larger fleets. And that leads to this conversation of, is there a driver shortage, or is it a shortage of quality drivers? But regardless, you know, I'm curious about that driver retention piece. How can companies help prevent that side of,
Yeah, I think it all comes down to treating them fair. We talked about that a couple of times. But getting to know them, drivers are not just a number. They're a person. They have a life. And one of the things that our claim to fame a little bit, I hope, and I think that anybody would say, is if their daughter Sally has a dance recital on Thursday night, we're going to do everything under our power to make sure that they're home for that dance recital. Yeah. And I understand not everybody can do that, but we will truly put people over profit when it comes to that. And we did have somebody hired in our office a couple years ago. I'm trying to choose how I want to tell this story, but basically saying you're letting a lot of money on the table because you're not running these guys out. You know, they should be working right. 14 hours a day, every day, and you have too many exceptions. And I'm like, well, as a company, that's who we are. We're going to have a few of those exceptions to make sure that they can have a valuable career in trucking. And it's not, trucking doesn't own them. They're people, just the same as you or I are. And so that's what we really try to do. And again, we're not perfect, but our whole team would live by those same values. And I think you could ask anybody as far as a driver on our team, and they would give you that same feedback. Because it's expensive to onboard new people.
Yeah.
And to your point on the driver shortage, I do think we have it. I think we're going to have it.
Yep.
But it's more of a qualified driver.
Exactly.
And, you know, even, well, that's a whole nother conversation, but once they're starting to legalize marijuana and things like that, I think that we have to find a better way to test for some of that. And anyway, whole nother conversation for another time, but it is something that's affecting our industry.
I mean, I'm right there with you. When marijuana legalization was happening on the West Coast, one of the things our company was very focused on was like, look, have a way to test for it at roadside.
Right.
Otherwise, you shouldn't do it. Like, just driver safety in general. But I mean, that's an interesting topic. But I do want to transition to the future of trucking. And one of these is DOT regulations. A lot of changes happen. Yeah. New regulations coming out. How do you stay up to date on all the stuff that comes out?
Yeah, Pennsylvania Motor Truck is a huge way that we stay up to date with their constant updates. Our insurance company also does a really good job of getting information out. You have to be educated.
Yeah.
They would be probably the two biggest ways that we stay up to date with the new regulations. Yeah.
Yeah. Awesome. Yeah. Otherwise, you can go to cnsprotects.com and check out our news blogs. I write all of those. But, you know, especially, you know, we're transitioning to a new president in 2025, in the next 4 years is going to be interesting. A lot of his focus last time he was president was deregulation, and the DOT, you know, slowed down on a lot of stuff. And we know that there's a long list of things that they want to get past, speed limiters, you know, brokerage, you know, bad brokerage stuff, and all kinds of things that they're chasing. But I'm just curious on your perspective, what does the next 4 years look like on the transportation side?
Sure. I don't have a crystal ball. What I will say is typically under the last Trump economy, deregulation for some of the things he did was good. I think there has to be some regulation, right?
Yep.
And we understand that. None of us are saying any different than that. We don't want a free-for-all. We've driven by townships that don't have any regulations, and you can tell. And so we don't want that. We want to be safe. We want to be operational. Where I think we have the problem is you start to have people, and to your point a little bit ago, educating our legislators. We talked about PMTA, advocacy, all that. But people are making decisions that don't fully understand the impacts or even the knowledge of what we do. And so anyway, where I think back to where I think the Trump administration, I think educating our legislators, educating our people on this. I also think that, you know, electrification is coming, right?
Yep.
But we don't have enough power to even support some of the mandates that you're hearing in other states. And so, again, that all goes back to the education. So I'm actually really excited about the next 4 years. I think Trump, his policies will be good for business as a whole. You can kind of already see that in the stock market.
Yeah.
And I know he's not perfect, but basically I will say I think it'll be good for business. And I think some of the deregulation stuff we have – yeah, my personal opinion.
Yeah.
We're in Pennsylvania. We have a lot of resources in our ground that got shut down, obviously.
Right.
What we're doing today, even with burning coal and things like that, they have systems in place that it's not what it was 20 years ago.
Exactly.
And let's figure out how to use what we have in the United States of America instead of relying heavily on some of these other countries. And so I think that's what Trump will be good for.
Is there a regulation? Hey, if you could deregulate this or like remove that regulation, what would it be for trucking specific?
So I'll speak out of both sides of my mouth on this one. One of our biggest challenges with equipment lately has been sensors.
Yeah.
And so all of that has to do with you know, how clean our exhaust is coming out of our trucks. And so we've choked them down to the point where we have a sensor for everything. I think 138 sensors based on just the exhaust alone. I wouldn't bet a dollar on that, but it's a lot. And so we'll have trucks go down where they should still be running, but they'll go down because a sensor sends something out. Then all of a sudden you have, you know, 2 or 3 days till that sensor's back in stock and the whole nine yards. And so if there's one, I would think that how can we figure out how to not restrict these trucks so much while still, we got to be good for our environment. I'm not talking anything different like that. But even getting some of the older trucks off the road, I like old trucks, so that's what I said I'm talking about out both sides of my mouth. But figure out how to, if we can trade in some of these older trucks for newer trucks. But that's really hard to do with all the problems that they're having. So how do we figure that out and not restrict them so much?
And with the transition company, whether it's with natural gas vehicles, LG and others to electric, do you have any mindset in mind of if you're getting a new vehicle, it being some kind of zero emission vehicle?
So, well, and the other thing I want to say, just to back up a second on the sensors is, I believe that our motors are cleaner today without all the stuff that they choked them out to be.
Right.
And so, anyway.
Well, and the transitions from like what the trucks ran in the 90s and the now how efficient they're running today, it's huge.
Even without all the...
Exactly.
Yeah. And so I think there's something there. As far as when we're looking ahead, yes, there has to be... It is something we look at. There has to be infrastructure, and that's the biggest thing. I most recently looked at, was involved in some CNG stuff. Well, the problem is if I have fuel at my facility, where a truck can come and fuel up in 10 minutes, to go to another facility that has CNG, maybe it's only 10 miles away. It doesn't sound like much to anybody, but to go there to fuel up, even if it's quick fill or let it park or whatever, it's still time added onto the driver's day. Yep. And so kind of deters you from that, even though it might be a good program. Electric, whole nother conversation. We don't have the infrastructure for that. The costs are just so high. And,
it's always hard too, because it's like, hey, well, just get stations at your site. Well, you're talking about hundreds of thousands, if not, you know, half a million or a million just to install that at your facilities. Right. It's like, it's that transition might be coming, but it's still further down the road.
I think we just got to be realistic with all the expectations.
Yeah, makes sense. I'm curious, you know, speaking of the future of trucking, you know, we talk about GFI wanting to grow. What's that next 5-10 years look like, do you think?
So I do think we're in this growth mindset as we talk. So key hire coming, as I mentioned, which we're really excited about. I do think we do about half of what we do is in logistics or brokerage, and then about half with the trucks that we own. We want to grow both of them.
Okay.
I do think that in the next, hopefully this isn't a scare to anybody, in the next couple of years I could see another terminal somewhere in a strategic location. That would make our third. And so we just, when we back in, I talked about our why. Our why is hopefully empowering heroes, and we want to impact and influence others. And so to do that, we think we're going to expand our reach. And that means with customers, I mean, hopefully our customer feel with us is the same thing. We want to over communicate a little bit, build those relationships, build those friendships, and move forward. So, I think it's going to be exciting to see. We're in the process with our leadership team of actually setting, hey, what does 10 years look like? What does 3 years look like? And how are we going to get there? So we're walking through that right now as a team. And I'm very thankful to have a team to do it, because I'm not smart enough to do it by myself. So
that's awesome.
Good. Yeah.
All right. So to wrap up in a high note, I'm curious about a lot of community involvement and, you know, social involvement from going down to Houston and helping with supplies, North Carolina, you guys help with Make-A-Wish truck convoy that happens around here. I'm just curious, what's some of those biggest impacts that, you know, socially, charitably with GFI that sort of, you just like, that was awesome.
Yeah, so I will say, you mentioned about going to Houston, that was really cool because everybody wants to help in some way, and they don't have tangible ways to do it. We have a truck in North Carolina right now as we speak unloading. There's four of them down there hand unloading. There's not thought there was going to be a few more people. But anyway, that was cool just to see a community come together. Yeah. And we teamed up with some other people. And I believe the community that we're in, we didn't organize this one, but we did help. This is the first supplies they're getting since the flood.
And, wow.
So that's been really cool. Even the organizations that we support, like, it's just fun to see the tangible events. And, you know, you might support this. I could go through a list of organizations that we support, and they're all good ones. But then when your friend ends up with a child that has cancer, and you can go, okay, I have, you know, some companies that we work with or that we've been supporting, and they go, one of them just happened to me last year, personal friend of mine, daughter ends up with cancer, and things get tight for that. You can hook them up with an organization that can help with some of their stuff. And so that's when it gets real. Make-A-Wish is really important to us. Our vice president of operations, it always has been.
Yes.
Vice president of operations has a wish child. And so a number of years ago, I think it's 20 years ago, whatever it was, they were actually a wish family. And so that one's near and dear to our heart because of somebody on our team. And so it's really cool. But for us, it's just fun to watch. We also, at the end of the year, we allow our leadership team to help designate some of our giving. And so that's really fun just to get people involved in being generous. And so
that's awesome.
I don't know that we have any defining moments. They've all been really cool. But I think probably for me personally, it was when these organizations that we support, you go, wait a minute, I got somebody that can help you.
And do you still drive truck and do some of these?
I do a little bit. Now it's a little more for fun. a little bit of our history. We've had a gentleman named Wendell Buckwater bought a truck in 1988. And in 1992, I believe, he came to work on our brokerage side. Worked with us up until 2019, where he passed away tragically of a heart attack. To our eyes, he was ran marathons, very healthy. But he always impacted everybody that he came in contact with in a positive way. And so he'd ask you about you, something you were dealing with or whatever. He'd tell you he's going to pray for you. And you'd see him 3 or 4 months later. How's this going? He just remembered stuff. So anyway, this is all part of the story. In 2019, when he passed away, we were able to purchase his truck. And so we keep it around. We're doing some things to it. But when I get to drive, I get to drive that one. And so now my driving is a little more when I want to than when I have to. But yesterday when we were loading these trailers to go to North Carolina, I was able to be on the road a little. So I still have a love for it, still have a passion for it. And I think it'll always be something in my blood.
And then next generation family lined up to potentially take it over down the road
after you? It's very interesting. That's part of our 10-year plan, is to at least be thinking about that kind of stuff, or it will be.
I mean, you're young
but
still, so.
Yeah, I do have 19, 18, and 13-year-old kids, so we'll see. For us, there has to be a position open, so it's not guaranteed. And if you're going to be in management, you have to work away from home for a couple years before you can just come in. And so a little bit different, you know. I would say we're more of a business family than a family business, and we do the buy-in process and the whole nine yards. So
I love that.
Time will tell. We'll see. My son did just turn 18, and he's going to go get a CDL. You guys are actually going to help with that.
Yes.
So, we'll see what happens.
Awesome. Well, hey, Ryan, your company, amazing. If you're looking to drive for a company, come out to Pennsylvania. GFI, fantastic company to work for. Thank you for joining me today.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
And if you want more information on GFI, we can put the notes on there. And if you got questions for Ryan as well, let us know in the comments down below, and we'll try to get those answered and get it out to you as quickly as possible. If you are looking for anything else, wanting to get involved with PMTA.org, go there to get help with PMTA specifically, but go to your state's trucking association. They're incredible what they do there. So I highly recommend getting involved in some way. And then, like we said, staying up to date on the news with regulations and things like that. There's lots of ways to do that. Of course, I'm going to tout, you know, our YouTube channel, like, subscribe, comment, you know, check out our articles. We have a newsletter. We have a safety conference coming up in February, end of February, that we're going to try to do annually as well. So lots of ways to be involved. Check that out and don't miss that. With that, again, thank you for joining me. Yeah. And as always, stay safe out there.